6. Manchir Cathedral, City of Manchir, Princedom of Coruscant. Sir Corin Garvey stood as the organ prelude soared like the wings of the archangels themselves, and the vast doors of Manchir Cathedral swung open. The procession started up the aisle behind the scepter-bearer and the thurifer. Ropes of sweet-smelling smoke trailed the jeweled thurible as it swung on its golden chain, and the thurifer was followed by a half-dozen candle-bearers, then a solid phalanx of acolytes and underpriests. Behind that, however, came the true reason the cathedral was so densely packed on this particular Wednesday. Archbishop Michael Stainer, primate of the Church of Carus, followed those acolytes, those underpriests. As the cathedral choir's massed voices rose in glorious song, those close enough to the archbishop could see his lips moving as he sang along with them. The rubies of his crown glittered like fresh hearts of blood in the morning sunlight, spilling through the cathedral's stained glass, and he was a full head taller than Clermont Gerling, who walked at his side. They paced steadily through the tumultuous waves of music and voices, and Garvey wondered how hard it was to do that. Despite the serenity of the archbishop's expression, the memory of the temple loyalists who'd attempted to assassinate him in his own cathedral had to be floating about in his mind, especially in light of what had happened to Timon Hoskins. If it was, there was no sign of it in Stainer's demeanor, and Garvey discovered he wasn't really surprised by that. His lips twitched as he remembered Stainer's initial meeting with his own father and the rest of the Regency Council, minus Earl Craggie Hill, who'd been rather conveniently, in Garvey's opinion, recalled to Valena by some purely local affair. Although he supposed it was undutiful of him, Garvey had decided his father's attitude towards the archbishop had been remarkably similar to a stiff-legged hunting hound, whose keen sense of smell suggested he was about to come face to face with a slash lizard. Tartarian had been less overtly stiff, though even his manner had been more than a bit wary, and the rest of the Regency Council's reactions had ranged downward from there. Yet there was something about Michael Stainer. Sir Corin Garvey couldn't put a label on that something, but whatever it was potent stuff. It was less what the archbishop had said than how he'd said it, Garvey decided. He'd obviously simply decided to assume the members of the council were men of goodwill, that despite the fact of Caleb's, and for that matter his own, excommunication, they'd given their oaths in good faith, that he understood their first concern must be the welfare of the Coruscantians, who looked to them for protection, that he took it for granted that when men of goodwill recognized a problem, they would seek its solution. And it had been equally evident that if there was a single intolerant, bigoted, zealotry-ridden bone anywhere in his entire body, he was a wizard at concealing it. That's his real secret weapon, Garvey thought now. He genuinely is a man of God. I don't think there's an ounce of weakness anywhere in him. Yet it's obvious, to me at least, that it's gentleness that drives him. Outraged gentleness, perhaps, but still gentleness. No one can spend 20 minutes in his presence without realizing that. He may be wrong, but there's no question that he's motivated by genuine love for God and his fellow man. And what makes that secret weapon so effective is that it's not a weapon at all. It's simply the way he is. Of course, there's also... The general's eyes drifted upward to the royal box. As in every cathedral, it was close enough to the sanctuary to be certain its occupants saw and heard everything clearly. With Prince Divan and Princess Iris in exile in Delphirac, the box was rather conspicuously unoccupied, which only made the single imperial guardsman standing in front of its closed wicket gate even more noticeable. He wore the black armor and the black, gold, blue, and silver of the Carisian Empire, but what everyone seemed to notice about him first were those strange sapphire eyes, Unlike the vast majority of Coruscantians, Garvai had met Sajan Merlin Athrawus before. Indeed, every member of the Regency Council had met him, in passing at least, and the Earls of Anvil Rock and Tartarian had spent quite a bit of time in his company, since he'd been the only armsman Caleb had allowed to be present during the surrender negotiations. Sir Alec Arthur knew him even better in some ways, or knew the Sajan's handiwork better at any rate, since it was the only thing that had kept him alive at the Battle of Green Valley. But everyone in the entire princedom knew his reputation, knew he was the most deadly warrior in the entire world, and that he'd personally killed all three of the assassins who'd attacked Stainer in Telesburg Cathedral. So knowing he was there, alert eyes sweeping back and forth constantly over the packed cathedral, probably contributed at least a little bit to the archbishop's serenity. The opening hymn carried Stainer and Gerling to the sanctuary, and Garvai settled back in his own pew once both archbishops had seated themselves in their waiting thrones and the congregation was free to sit as well. The service flowed smoothly. There'd been virtually no changes to the long-standing and much-beloved liturgy. Indeed, the only substantive change was the omission of the Pledge of Loyalty to the Grand Vicar as the head of God's Church on Safehold, which, Garvai suspected, probably struck the group of four as a very substantive change. But eventually, they reached the point for which every person in that cathedral had been waiting, and the enormous structure was hushed, so silent the faint sounds of Stainer's footsteps were clear and distinct as he crossed to the pulpit.